Thanks for joining us. I'm Diane Rehm. The Tea Party scored another victory earlier this week. Alaska's incumbent Republican Senator Lisa Murkowski conceded defeat in the primary to Joe Miller. He's a conservative favored by Tea Party activists. Joining me to talk about Tea Party movement and its potential impact on both parties and Congress, Jeff Guerin. He's a Democratic pollster and analyst. Stephen Moore is a member of the Wall Street Journal's editorial board, joining us from an NPR studio in New York, Kate Zernike. She's a national correspondent for the New York Times. Of course, we do invite you to join us as well, 800-433-8850. Send us your email to drshow@wamu.org. Join us on Facebook or send us a tweet. Good morning to all of you.
Good morning.
Hi, Dan.
Good morning.
Jeff Guerin, what do you make of this latest Gallup poll saying that Republicans are favored by the public over Democrats 51% to 41%?
Well, the Gallup poll has gone up and down. This is a very large number, and it's been no secret all through the year. This is a very challenging political cycle for Democrats. People are not feeling particularly optimistic about the economy right now, and I think they're casting a vote to say that they are looking for change and more progress. And there are a lot of and people who have grievances with the way things are very activated. But what I would say is that the other piece of the dynamic here is that through all of this, through people's preferences for the Republicans in these trial heats, the negatives for the Republican Party remain sky high. If you ask people how they feel about the Republican Party, the negatives are as high or even higher than for the Democratic Party. And I think part of what's going on here is that people don't think there's any particular consequence to electing a lot more Republicans to Congress. It's a way to cast a protest vote without having a much downside. And this is germane to our discussion about the Tea Party, because I think that may have the potential to change that a little bit.
Jeff Guerin, he's Democratic pollster for Peter D. Hart Research Associates. How do you read these figures, Stephen Moore?
I generally agree with Jeff. I think the one thing I'd hone in on is this energy factor, because Diane, I was out at the Glenn Beck rally this past weekend, and there were hundreds of thousands of people out there. I've very rarely seen anything like that. And these are people who are just pumped up. And Jeff is right. They're angry. You're also right, Jeff, that I talked to a lot of these people. They're not especially fond of the Republican Party. They haven't forgiven the Republicans for their misbehavior over the last 10 years. But they're really concerned about the direction that Obama and the Democratic Congress have taken the country over the last 18 months or so. And so, look, 2 months is a long time in American politics, so things can change. I've seen that happen many times just in the last couple of weeks in election cycle. But right now, if these numbers were to hold up until Election Day, this would translate into about a 60 or 70 seat loss for the Democrats in the House.
And speaking of numbers, I don't want to let your statement about hundreds of thousands of people at the Beck rally stand without some question, because there have been lots of estimates regarding that number from 10,000 to 100,000, and now you've used hundreds
of
thousands.
You're right. These numbers are always in question. We can tell from the aerial photos there are a lot of people there. I asked some of the park police people, you know, how many people do you estimate are here? And they estimated to me about 250,000, so.
Interesting. All right. Turning to you, Kate Zernike, Joe Miller had the support of Tea Party activists in Alaska and also of Sarah Palin. So to what extent do you see a distinction between the Republican Party and the Tea Party?
Well, I think the Tea Party has been saying this all along, that as Steve said, they're upset with the Republicans as well as the Democrats. And so I think a lot of the Tea Party action, I think when we look back on this in a year, we're going to say that a lot of the Tea Party's most important impact was, in fact, in the primaries, mm-hmm. where, again, they're pushing the party to the right and they're choosing these more conservative candidates. What I think is interesting is just even a month ago, people were worried and Republicans were worried that this was going to mean they would lose a lot of these seats. I think the anger is now such, or the discontent is now such, that people think that these Tea Party candidates, who the Democrats were hoping they could portray as fringe or extremists, they now stand a very good chance of winning. So I think, you know, if you look at Alaska, I think this is exactly what the Tea Party has been saying for months that they're going to do. You know, everyone's been debating, are they racist? They've been looking at the signs and trying to figure out what they want. And meanwhile, the Tea Party's been organizing and looking for candidates like this who they can help and who can help push the party to the right.
Kate Zernike, she's a national correspondent for the New York Times. She's the author of a new book titled Boiling Mad, Inside Tea Party America. Do join us, 800-433-8850. Send us your email to drshow@wamu.org. Jeff Guerin, what about money? How much of a role is money playing in these primary elections?
I would say that on the surface, it's much more about activism than about money. And we live in a new world. The internet has changed everything. You can organize in a different way. And so that I don't think that money per se is at the heart of all of this. In fact, Lisa Murkowski had much, much more money in Alaska, and and much, much less energy, obviously, on her side. But, you know, there is, according to Jane Mayer's interesting piece in The New Yorker, there's money going into the Tea Party movement from very wealthy people who would like to see it succeed. So it's not that it is wholly a creation of the grassroots.
But at the same time, you've got George Soros giving lots of money to Democrats.
Right. I think that we know that to be the case. I think that that's much more public than David Koch's role in funding the Tea Party.
Yeah. Now,
but Diane, if I could just get in there, I do think that Jeff is right. I mean, this is about organizing. It's not about money. The money is important, but the Koch brothers, for instance, spent against John Kerry in 2004, and of course they helped. But Americans for Prosperity has been around, as have groups like FreedomWorks. What's new about this year, I mean, these groups, FreedomWorks and Americans for Prosperity, have been trying to create a grassroots movement for years and have not been able to. And so I think they were really helped by sort of indignation over the stimulus and bailouts, and just worry about the economy. And I think that's driven a lot of people to help them. But it really is more about the organizing than about the money.
Stephen Moore, what generalizations can you make about the policies that these outsider groups, Tea Party and mm-hmm. otherwise, are looking for? What policies do they want? What do they want to discard? What do they want to change?
I see some parallels to the Perot movement back in 1992, which, Ross Perot ran sort of on fiscal responsibility and a balanced budget. I think a lot of I'd be interested in Jeff's view on this, but I think a lot of those Perot voters have kind of become part of this Tea Party movement. When I talk to these folks, they feel like things are out of control in Washington. They feel that the $1.5 trillion deficits are just wholly irresponsible and are mortgaging our future. They don't think that the stimulus plan worked, and they do want a kind of return to fiscal responsibility. They want ethics in government, and they're really concerned, not just angry. They are angry. You know, boiling over is a good point, but they're also really fearful. These are people who are really afraid about where our country is headed.
What do you think, Jeff?
Well, I think that there are lots of people who are afraid of where the country is headed for lots of different reasons. The people in the Tea Party are fearful specifically about federal power. The Tea Party is an ideological movement to the extent that it has coherence.
And
what makes it cohere is really an antagonism to the role of the federal government.
Mm-hmm.
And that leads it not to not just to talk about concerns about the deficit and things that many Americans share, but really fundamental questions about what the federal government should and shouldn't be doing, including Medicare and Social Security and the Department of Education and a whole host of things of that nature. So that this is not your garden variety, we're concerned about the deficit kind of group. This is a group with a very strong ideological point of view and sense of antagonism toward and grievance about the federal government, and they are fearful about
that's
it.
True.
But wouldn't they be more angry with Republicans than with Democrats then, considering the Bush years?
This is the key point that we were just talking about, that I agree the major impact of the Tea Party movement has been in Republican primaries. I mean, if you look, Lisa Murkowski, my goodness, if you had asked me 2 weeks ago or Jeff 2 weeks ago, what are the chances that Lisa Murkowski was going to lose? Nobody saw that coming. And, you know, when you talked about the money advantage, Lisa Murkowski outspent Jeff Miller 20-1. 20-1, and yet he still won. So that was an incredible political statement, and it is going to be interesting if some of these candidates like Rand Paul and some of the others, Sharon Angle in Nevada win, you're going to have a much more, not just a more Republican Congress, but a much more conservative Republican Congress.
Stephen Moray, he's a member of the Wall Street Journal's editorial board. Kate Czernicki is a national correspondent for the New York Times. Jeff Guerin is a Democratic pollster. Short break. We'll be right back. And welcome back. We're talking about the will you two hush, please? We're talking about the Tea Party movement, its effect on politics, its effect on the Republican Party. And here in the studio, Stephen Moore, he's a member of the Wall Street Journal's editorial board, and Jeff Guerin of Peter D. Hart Research Associates. He's a Democratic pollster. On the line with us from New York, from our NPR studio, is Kate Czernicki, national correspondent for the New York Times and author of the new book, Boiling Mad, Inside Tea Party America. We're going to open the phone shortly, but first I want to come to you, Kate. Stephen Moore mentioned Glenn Beck and the rally on this past weekend. Where does he fit in? He came out that day with a totally religious kind of force behind his statement. What do you make of that?
Well, I found that the rally was definitely more more religious than the standard Tea Party rally. And I think some of the people there who were real sort of who came to Glenn Beck through the Tea Party movement were a little surprised that it wasn't more political. But I did talk to a lot of people in the crowd who had never been to a Tea Party movement, so they were just big Glenn Beck fans. In terms of his role in the movement, I sort of think of him as the Oprah of the Tea Party movement. He recommends books on him. I mean, there are people who call him the professor, and they say they go home and they DVR his show if they don't make it in time to watch him every day. But they do watch him every day, and they think of him as the professor, and they feel like, you know, he gives them these history lessons, and he gives them books that they then go out and buy. I mean, he made Friedrich Hayek's The Road to Serfdom. He made it a bestseller. He made this book called The 5,000 Year Leap, which is about the Constitution, you know, published in 1981. It was a bestseller again last year because Glenn Beck recommended it. So I think they're really, I think the reason they like him is they see him as someone who is self-taught. And they like that he refers them to these books. He sort of says, you know, don't take my word for it. Go out and read this book. So they feel like there's something there. They feel they can trust him more than they can other media figures.
Kate, you're creating a fairly benign picture of Glenn Beck. And what you haven't mentioned is the fact that he's called the president of the United States racist against white people.
Absolutely. And listen, there are other less benign things, too. I mean, certainly he's called the president a Marxist. He's called the president a socialist. I mean, these are routine things on the Glenn Beck show. He's also, in terms of, you know, when we talk about the vision of the country, his vision of the country, his vision of the Constitution is one where there's no public safety net, where that's unconstitutional, where the founding fathers meant there to be much more religion in schools, much more religion in our public life. And they're not talking about the religions that the sort of variety of religions that we see in American life today. They're talking about a very, you know, the Judeo-Christian perspective, which is what he says. So I think you're right that his is a very specific perspective. I think there was definitely an overtone at the rally that this president is not one of us.
Here's an email from Tom in Baltimore, Maryland. He says, informal and formal surveys of the knowledge Tea Party rank and file members have about the issues, including my own very informal interviews with folks on the Washington Mall, indicate they have an astonishingly poorly informed perspective on the issue. Many insist Obama has raised their taxes and is responsible for the largest part of the deficit. Jeff Garin, are they blaming Obama for everything that's wrong?
Well, those are two separate questions. Are they poorly informed and are they blaming Obama? The answer to the first is no, and the answer to the second is yes. I don't think the question is whether it is not about the level of information. In fact, they've got an abundance of information. It is the interpretation that people put on the information. People who in the Tea Party know chapter and verse on where Barack Obama went to school in Indonesia. They know a lot of stuff. It is how they put it all together and interpret it, and they interpret it in a very negative way, and I've said they have a hostility to the federal government. They also have an incredible sense of hostility to President Obama, and you know, obviously we had a lot of that on our side to President Bush during the final years of his term. But it was of a different character and nature. Is that people in the Tea Party don't just see President Obama as being wrong on the issues. They see him as being a conspirator. I mean, they talk about him in those kinds of terms. And that Obama that is dangerous, you know, not dangerous to the fabric of the country. And that is another, I think, defining characteristic. All of this will become relevant next year when we have at least some of these people in the United States Senate. And we'll raise real questions about how are we supposed to make all of this work.
But, you know, I think that it's interesting to me how 2 years ago we saw this kind of phenomenon with Barack Obama, that Barack Obama would bring out huge crowds of people, and people on the left said how wonderful this is. We've got citizen engagement. We're overcoming the apathy. I mean, my two sisters were out at Grant Park the night that Barack Obama won the election. And what's happened, which is really a remarkable thing, is in 2 years, all the energy that was on the left has now come from a kind of the old Reaganite crowd on the right. And I think, look, I know I've spent a lot of time with the Tea Party people. I think they're extraordinarily patriotic. I think they're extremely knowledgeable about the issues. You're right. They really detest Barack Obama, in much the way, same way the left detested George Bush. But this citizen engagement, I think, is a very positive thing.
But there is another element to this hatred of Barack Obama, which is that there are accusations that he was not born
right.
in this country, that he is non-Christian. Kate Czernicke, is that coming from the hatred of Barack Obama and combining that with the hatred of government?
I think it's I think the birther faction, as we call it, is definitely there. And I heard on Friday night there was a convention of candidates that FreedomWorks organized in Washington before the Glenn Beck rally. And there was a candidate there, Morgan Philpott, who's running for Congress in Utah. And it's actually a district. Utah's a very red state, but this is a district that's now represented by a Democrat. And he stood up and he told this story about how his son was looking at his infant brother's head and said, "Oh, look, made in China." And Philpott said, "Well, what I want to know is when you shave Barack Obama's head, where does it say made in there?" And the crowd went wild. So there is certainly this sense. There are people in the Tea Party movement who hate this birther faction. They think it demeans what they're doing. They think that they are just being citizen activists, and they see a lot of pride in that. But there's absolutely a faction that does not see Barack Obama as one of us. And I think that that does combine.
This conversation we were having about the antagonism of the Tea Party movement to the Republican Party, I think, is also raises an interesting point. Because if you're Mitch McConnell and John Boehner after these primaries, I think you're in the position of, if you can't beat them, do you join them? Mm-hmm. And that, to what extent will the Tea Party come to define the Republican Party in the minds of the public? And I think the more that happens, it will make the Republican Party even more polarizing to the middle of the electorate.
But that's happened. I mean, this is the most important thing I've seen politically in this country in 20 years, is the Democratic Party has moved way to the left. And now we're seeing the Republican Party, in part because of the Tea Party, move to the right. And you've been, in Washington a long time yourself. I've never seen anything quite like it before. I mean, there is more political polarization. And I have to say, I blame, to some extent, Barack Obama. I mean, he came in with 70% approval ratings. He could have passed a stimulus bill back last year that had bipartisan support. Instead, he passed this $800 billion bill that got a single Republican vote, because he never really reached out to the Republicans. I think there's a bit of a negative feedback loop to that kind of we passed the two biggest bills, the partisan spending bill and the health care bill, virtually got no Republican vote.
So do you see, Jeff Garin, a parallel to the 1994 elections?
Well, the parallel is that we're in deep trouble, as we were in we Democrats are in deep trouble, as we were in 1994. But I do think that the nature of this is different, in part because in 1994, people didn't have these extraordinarily negative feelings about the Republican Party. Nobody had a living memory of what it meant to have a Republican majority. Who remembered Joe Martin, who was the previous Republican?
Although it's true that Bill Clinton was at that time kind of as unpopular as Barack Obama is with Republican voters.
And so I think the one big difference is that in these two remaining months that there is a genuine question about whether the Democrats are able to make the antipathy to the Republicans more relevant to people's decision-making. There's a possibility of doing that.
Steve, you had a piece over the weekend in the Wall Street mm-hmm. Journal about South Carolina mm-hmm. Republican Jim DeMint. Talk about his role.
Well, Jim DeMint has been a real political power player in the last year. He's probably the most conservative member of the Senate. I'm a good friend of his. I agree with his politics. He's fiercely anti-government growth and anti-spending. And he has created this kind of PAC, which has helped a lot of these conservative candidates that we've been talking about, like Sherrod Angle in Nevada and Rand Paul in Kentucky and in Colorado, Ken Buck. So there have been a number of upsets where conservative primary candidates have won against the establishment choice, against the people that Mitch McConnell and John Cornyn, who runs the senatorial committee, wanted. And that's a factor that will, you know, move the Republican Party further in a conservative direction. And the real, you know, this if the Republicans do win, and I think they are going to win the House, I don't know about the Senate, it actually offers Obama a chance to sort of move back to the middle, the way Bill Clinton did after 1994, and resurrect his presidency.
How do you see it, Kate?
Well, I think the real question is what Jeff was saying, which is how they're going to make this work. I mean, the things that they're promising, when you go out and you listen to Rand Paul in Kentucky and what he's saying to voters, is this is an unsustainable budget. We can't do this anymore. We cannot have politicians who bring home the money and promise you they're going to bring us home. I mean, which is all true. But the question is whether voters are going to like this. I mean, again, in 1994, they had no memory of what Republicans are doing.
Right.
Now, they're watching to see if they're going to be watching and saying, well, wait, Republicans, you have to cut spending, too. And to cut the debt meaningfully, you have to cut entitlement programs. There's just no way around it. And so the question is whether that's going to be popular. If these Tea Party candidates get in there, are they going to be able to do things like pass a balanced budget amendment, balance uh-huh. the budget within a year, which is
right.
something Rand Paul had talked about, even cutting the Department of Education? I mean, what about all this? I mean, you know, these are tough things to do.
You bet. Kate Zernike, a national correspondent for The New York Times. You're listening to The Diane Rehm Show. We'll open the phones now first to Birmingham, Alabama. Jonathan, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks, Diane.
Sure.
I have a quick question with regards to the Tea Party. It was stated earlier that they are a very ideological group. I guess they stand on shrinking government and the budget and also just on a lot of anger. And I wonder, where now most people get their news, it seems, from a tweet or from a Facebook post or from a soundbite running on the news program, how does Obama and the Democrats, how do they show that in the last administration the budget was, you know, out of control, the deficit was already climbing? How does he demonstrate and communicate that that's not something that you fix in 18 months? How does he show that the path that he's on is a meaningful path and is hopefully going to get us to the point that Tea Partiers want us to be, with a budget that is controllable? Also, with their ideology, the defense of their civil liberties, as some of them have said that Obama is somehow eroding, where was the Tea Party in the last part of the Bush years when warrantless wiretapping was all over and our image across the world was going down?
All right.
Torture.
Jeff Garin.
Well, I would say that the presidency is still the bulliest pulpit there is. I mean, you know, up against
a lot of people have raised the question as to why President Obama has not used that bully pulpit more, that his speech from the Oval Office the other night was only the second of his presidency. So there are questions about why he has not been more forceful.
Right. I think, you know, we can talk about that, but I think the caller was saying, how do you, you know, compete
yeah.
against all of this
sure.
other information? The presidency is a bully pulpit. It remains that.
But he's
that.
Not using it,
well,
Jeff.
I don't have that view particularly, but you might. I think there are. The other thing that has changed over the course of 20 years is that people choose the news sources that suit them. We don't really have common news sources in America the way we would have when everybody was watching one of the three nightly newscasts. And so that the news itself has become a little bit more ideological and or a lot more ideological. And people choose the news source that they feel most comfortable with in terms of their own view of the world. And so that, you know, there still is a middle in the American electorate.
Well, the other question
and
is,
it's easy to miss.
What would you have Barack Obama say? I mean,
Say or do.
Right. Well, let's just talk about what he can say. I mean, the economic program, in my opinion, has been a catastrophe. It hasn't worked. We've got 10% unemployment. We've got these massive deficits. They can say it would be worse, but I don't think most Americans really buy that. And there's also evidence that Americans are getting really tired of Obama blaming Bush for everything. I mean, it's been a year and a half. This is a president who said he was going to, you know, take charge. And so I just think it puts him in a very difficult position. And right now they don't have much of a game plan to get us out of this recession.
The fact that it could be worse is cold comfort, but it also is true.
No, it's not. He made it much worse.
I think, you know, Mark Zandi, who is a...
Don't call him a Republican.
He was certain, Senator McCain felt comfortable counseling with him.
I asked John about that.
He made it pretty clear that along with... It is the economic consensus that the stimulus...
Only of liberal economists.
I don't think that's true. I don't think that's true at all.
All right. Jeff Garin, Stephen Moore, Kate Zernike. In the rest of the program, I hope they will stop interrupting each other. And we'll take calls from around the country, 800-433-8850.
National broadcast of The Diane Rehm Show is made possible in part by American University, by the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, committed to building a more just, verdant, and peaceful world. More information at macfound.org. By the estate of Joan Kroc, whose bequest serves as an enduring investment in the future of public radio. And by the Kiplinger Foundation, supporting public understanding of business and the economy. This is NPR.
A memoir about treasuring and losing a friend. Pulitzer Prize-winning author Gail Caldwell tells how the extraordinary bond she shared with her best friend has endured, even after death. The Diane Rehm Show, next hour. Welcome back. We'll go back to the phones in just one moment. Here's an email from Raj, who says, one of your guests claimed Obama has gone far to the left. Can he explain why he thinks that? To most of us who are actually on the left, we see Obama as a moderate, not left or even liberal. If he had gone to the left, he would have ended the wars already, advocated for single-payer health care, taken a stronger stand against Israel, not given a bailout to the banks. His rhetoric is not left at all. Diane is correct. He's not using his bully pulpit to espouse anything but moderate politics. Stephen Moore.
Well, I just don't agree with that. I think we had this massive near $1 trillion spending bill, which just gave us $1 trillion of more debt. It didn't get a single Republican vote. And he could have, at that point, gotten a lot of Republican votes for a more balanced package. And then we had this health care bill that I think does move us towards a socialized medicine system. And again, there was a bill that he couldn't get virtually a single Republican vote on. Those are two big deals. He tried to advance the cap and trade bill, which the American people don't want. He tried to pass a very pro-union agenda. I think one of the problems with this president and the Democratic Party today, Jeff probably disagrees with this, I think every policy they implement is oriented towards the militant labor unions, as if the labor unions run the party today.
Jeff Garin?
You're right. I disagree with that. I think even the health care bill is, you know, the health care bill is the structure of it is something that Bob Dole would have embraced, that Orrin Hatch was for a mandate before he was against it. This is not a radical notion. This is not out of the mainstream of what both Democrats and Republicans had been talking about in terms of fixing
it
the health care.
It was actually Mitt Romney's bill.
Health care, right. It's very much in line with what occurred in Massachusetts. And here's what I think is happened. It's not, and this is relevant to our conversation about the Tea Party, is that part of the reason why there is not bipartisan support for what President Bush is doing is that what President Obama is doing, thank you, Stephen, is the Tea Party has made it too dangerous for Republicans to meet Obama in the middle or anywhere close to the middle. That is, if we live in a world where Bob Bennett is too liberal and where Lisa Murkowski is too liberal, how do Republicans function in a government by consensus?
All right, Kate Zernike, I think you can weigh in here.
Well, I think that's absolutely right. But in even on the rhetoric on the other side, I mean, if President Obama were a socialist, wouldn't he have nationalized the banks? Wouldn't he have? I mean, I think the far left wants a public option. So I think the rhetoric on both sides and the expectations on both sides are a bit much, and I think Jeff is right that this was very much, a fairly middle of the road approach. And I think the Tea Party has spooked people. I mean, Lindsey Graham said this after Scott Brown's election in January. He said, if you are a Republican in a red state, don't think this can't happen to you. Don't think that you can't be voted out. And look what happened. Lisa Murkowski gone. Robert Bennett gone.
All right. Let's go to Charlotte, North Carolina. Hi, Scotty. You're on the air. Go right ahead.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to go back to what Stephen said about these people not being misinformed. When I'm looking at 1 in 5 Americans believe that President Obama was not born in the United States, when they believe that he is a practicing secret Muslim. You know, basically all of the propaganda I'm seeing coming out of Fox News, which is where they get the majority of their information, I just don't understand how that comment can hold up. Now, I am what I call a Frederick Douglass Republican, and I have to say that with the election of all of these Tea Party candidates, if they're on the ballot, I think it can have the opposite effect of getting more of President Obama's supporters to turn out to the polls.
Kate Zernike.
I think that's true. I think there are, look, in Kentucky, you have to win. There are more Democrats registered than there are Republicans. You have to win Democrats to win the Senate seat there. And I think that's why Republicans are very worried about whether Rand Paul can win. I think there are policies that the Tea Party candidates talk about that are going to be alienating to independent voters. And that's why you see Rand Paul and Sharon Engel not saying much on the campaign trail.
All right. To South Bend, Indiana. Good morning, John.
Hey, guys. I have kind of a simple question. It's a brief question. I'm a college student, and I've been basically living under a rock for the past 9 months with homework and everything.
Sure.
I pretty much only get my news from The Daily Show, and I know next to nothing. Sorry, guys, I know. I know next to nothing about the Tea Party, to be totally honest. My general impression is that it's a movement mostly made up of baby boomers and misinformed crazy people. So I was wondering if the panel would give me their brief, like, what's the word I'm looking for? Like, just basically explain to somebody who doesn't know what the Tea Party is.
Sure.
I want to
start. And since you, Kate, have written a book about the Tea Party, let's start with you.
Well, I would say that the Tea Party movement, one of the polls definitely show that the Tea Party movement is older and whiter and more male. But within that, you have to see the nuances. And there is actually what's interesting to me about the Tea Party is it did start with a very young libertarian faction, people who were very tech savvy, who went out and did these first rallies. Rick Santelli, who's a CNBC broadcaster, called for a Chicago, was railing against bank bailouts and mortgage bailouts in February of 2009, and he said, we're going to have a Chicago-style Tea Party in July. Well, a week later, there were about 50 Tea Parties across the country, and they were largely organized by young, as I said, tech-savvy conservatives. Those rallies were then swelled over the next few months by older people who were really fearful or angry about bailouts. They were, I think, scared about what was happening with the economy. And the Tea Party has gradually just attracted more, I would say, more older people. But there are young mothers organizing this. There are young people freshly out of college, young conservatives. And I think it is largely a conservative movement. I would say there are some crazy people in there, but there are crazy people in most movements. So I hope that's a bit of a prime.
I think that's terrific. Go ahead, Steve.
Yeah, I agree with that characterization. I was interested, Kate, that when I was out there at the Beck rally, I saw a lot of women. I thought there was almost more women than men at that rally. And I was impressed by the fact that people came from so far away. I mean, these people who rode in buses, in some cases, for 12 or 13 hours to get here. That's a major commitment. And these are not rich people. And, it was an expense. I just had to say that I appreciate this gentleman's call. And I did the Daily Show a few weeks ago. And every college student I know watched it. And for better or worse, that's where our college kids are getting their news.
Interesting. Jeff Caron, do you want to add to any characterization? All right. Let's go to Huntsville, Alabama. Good morning, Joe.
Hi, good morning. I love your show.
Thank you.
Hey, I was just wanting to start holding these Tea Party folks and the conservatives, put their feet to the fire, and ask them which senators and which representatives are going to start sending people home when they have to start cutting jobs, construction programs, teachers, all these Social Security plans, all these cuts they want to do. Nobody asks them, well, who's going to do it and what exactly are you going to cut and who are you going to send home?
Jeff Caron.
That is a very good question. That is their, as Stephen says, they have this great concern about the federal budget deficit. There are, the president has a deficit commission meeting. The right wing of the Republican Party howled over the appointment of Alan Simpson because he, too, was not conservative enough. But, what's the plan? Paul Ryan has a budget. Is that the Republican Party plan? Republicans won't own up to it because it privatizes Social Security and Medicare, and ATR, the Americans for Tax Reforms, makes people sign a pledge in blood that you're not allowed to raise a penny in taxes. Right. So we've got the deficit, not a penny in taxes. Some of these guys want to have a national sales tax and replace the income with tax with that, which would raise even less revenue. So what are they going to cut? I think America is in for when you get down to brass tacks, this is going to be a lot more difficult. And the choices that they would advance are not America's choices.
All right. To Helotes, Texas. Good morning, Kathy.
Hello.
Hi. Go right ahead.
Oh, good. My name is Kathy, and I'm from a small town in South Texas. And I do wish you had had somebody on your panel who actually was a member of the Tea Party movement. I call it a movement. It's not really a party, so to speak. You can tell that young college man. And I think what's happening is that the Tea Party tends to be a groundswell of ordinary mainstream Americans who are just very concerned about losing our freedoms. And I think this is the way America is supposed to work.
Excuse me, Kathy, can you help me? Since you are a member, when you say lose our freedoms, what freedoms are you talking about?
Oh, gosh, do you have the time? How about the freedoms to teach your children, your family trade, like the pizzeria in New Haven, who can't employ their children any longer because to wait tables or to learn how to make pizza because it violates the labor laws, or the freedom to succeed or fail, giving companies a bailout because they're too big to fail. Now they don't have any motivation to control their risk. How about the freedom to eat what you want, limiting salt and fat in fast foods, and so we don't get to make a choice? How about the freedom to teach your child the difference between right and wrong behavior appropriate for their age? I mean, handing out free condoms to kids in elementary school when you don't tell their parents, but you do have to ask your parents if they can have an aspirin. How about the Pratt & Whitney in Connecticut wants to close its plant, the loss of 2,000 jobs, and Connecticut's trying to prevent it. If a company can't close its plant because it's not making money, that's a basic freedom. How about paying your employees as much as you want? CEOs, why can't you pay them if they're successful? I agree if they're not successful, but you pay quarterbacks millions of dollars.
All right. Kate Czernicki, does that pretty well sum it up?
Pretty well, I would say. Look, this goes back to what Jeff was saying. This is an anti-federalist movement. It's an anti-federal government movement. This is a movement, if there is a rallying cry of this movement, it's leave us alone.
Yep.
It's not, you know, Steve said earlier that it reminds him of the Perot voters. And I would say that that's true in terms of fiscal discipline, but it's very different. These people are not that concerned with good government or government reform. They just want the government to leave them alone. Not necessarily, they're willing to give the state government some powers, but they want the federal government to leave them alone.
Kate Czernicki, she's the author of the new book called Boiling Mad, Inside Tea Party America. And you're listening to The Diane Rehm Show. We've had an email from Mary in Rochester who said, one commentator says President Obama did not reach out to Republicans. He did reach out to Republicans, but they refused because they wanted to defeat President Obama and because it had to be their way only. Republicans were not interested in being bipartisan. Stephen?
Yeah, I think the mistake that Barack Obama made, the critical mistake in his presidency, goes back to that stimulus plan. As I said earlier, he came in with a 70% approval rating. The American people really wanted this president to succeed. And he had this crazy $900 billion spending bill with nothing in it that Republicans liked. There's nothing in that bill. Republicans wanted tax cuts. And if they had done maybe half spending, half tax cuts, I still would have been opposed to that, but I bet he could have gotten 20 Republicans in the Senate to vote for it and maybe 100 Republicans in the House. What Obama thinks bipartisanship is here's our plan and you all have to vote for it. That's not bipartisanship.
Jeff Garin.
That is not what occurred. The plan underwent substantial changes. They changed the mix of stimulus spending and tax cuts to suit the Republicans. The fact that they couldn't have it all their way, I'm sorry about that, but there was an election and there was an economic question on the table. And I think there are a lot of people even now who think the problem with the first stimulus is not that it did too much, but it did too little. And that we did not do enough to deal with the loss of money in the economy as a result of the Bush recession.
And here's a question from Justin in Bethesda, Maryland, who says, assuming a lot of Tea Party candidates make it to Congress, wouldn't their effect on Republicans be similar to the Blue Dog's effect on Democrats? And wouldn't a bunch of Tea Party wins now help Democrats in 2012 by showing how out of touch with mainstream America their views are? Kate Czernicki.
Well, I think that last point is certainly true, and that's possible. I do think you know, look, we elected a lot of sort of blue dog Democrats in 2006, and the Democrats went ahead and did health care reform this year anyway. So I guess you could look at it many different ways. I think the latter point is the more relevant one, is this, in fact, could be good for Obama in 2 years if we get people in there. I don't think governing is not going to be smooth under a Tea Party Congress. There's going to be a lot of fractiousness, and I don't think that's going to make people any happier.
Jeff Garren.
It's going to be a crazy couple of years if we have a Tea Party Congress, and we've got these big problems. And in after 1994, President Clinton, we had to go through a government shutdown, and I would think the prospects of that happening again are pretty darn high. But eventually they came to an accommodation. It's hard to see. These people do not want to come to an accommodation with President Obama. They don't want to see him succeed.
Stephen Moore, I'll give you the last word.
I hope that if Republicans take the House, that moves Barack Obama more to the center, as Bill Clinton quite effectively did for the good of the Democratic Party and also for the good of the country. And you know, we had high economic growth and a lot of good policies put in place when we had Bill Clinton in the White House and we had a Republican Congress. So hopefully we'll return to that.
Stephen Moore, a member of the Wall Street Journal's editorial board. Jeff Garren, he's a member of Peter D. Hart Research Associates. He's a Democratic pollster. Kate Zernike, a national correspondent for The New York Times, author of a new book titled Boiling Mad, Inside Tea Party America. We shall see, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks, Dan. Joining us. I'll be back with you tomorrow. I'm Diane Rehm.
The Diane Rehm Show is produced by Sandra Pinkard, Nancy Robertson, Susan Neighbors, Denise Couture, and Monique Nazareth. The engineer is Toby Schreiner. Dori Annisman answers the phones. Visit drshow.org for audio archives, transcripts, podcasts, and CD sales. Call 202-885-1200 for more information.